Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes, episode number 65, if you're counting along at home. My name is Kenny McIntosh, and I'm horrendously unwell. I feel like I could vomit any minute, so I'm going to try and get through this. It's probably going to be a bit of a shorter episode than usual, but we are here, and I'm joined as always by David J. McCutcheon. Hi David, I hear that you're feeling not much better than me.
No, Kenny, not at all. I flew to my brother-in-law's wedding in Orlando, stayed literally one street down from where we stayed in Orlando for WrestleMania in a series of condos.
Lovely.
And on the way back, I had a horrendous time on the airplane because I sat next to a woman, Kenny, who had the bubonic plague. Or maybe it was tuberculosis. I don't know. But either way, this woman, I have never heard a woman more sick in all of my life. And she fell asleep and she started hacking up her lungs and a piece of her lungs got in my face. So naturally, I now have whatever the fuck she had.
AIDS?
Yeah, I think it's one of those AIDS infections that spreads through the air and it goes straight into the lungs. Because
have you found any lesions yet?
Not more than usual.
I mean, people always talk about the cons of AIDS, but the pros is great weight loss.
Excellent weight loss, Kenny. How do you think that I have managed to slender down and lose these 62 lbs, sir?
I just thought it was you chasing Val around the bed for sex, and she's just faster than you, and it's just consistent.
Do you really think Val is that active that she would run around?
I feel like Val would just lie there and go, "Oh, fine, just go ahead," rather than effort to run.
She would have a stun gun next to the bed.
I thought you were going to say a stunt double, and I was like, "Fuck's sake, she's staying outside the box."
That would be way better. And, you know, I'd be stupid enough too. I wouldn't even notice a difference.
Married life, ladies and gentlemen. Married life. You know, it's funny, before I developed whatever the fuck it is I've got.
Tuberculosis AIDS, yes.
Tuberculosis AIDS, otherwise known as a tummy bug. I thought of you because you're a big fan of the pussy, right? Like, you love the pussy.
Yeah, the cats, sure. Absolutely.
That is what I meant. I did mean the cats. I don't know where your mind went, David.
No, immediately the cats. I love cats.
Good. Okay, so I thought about you and you love cats. So I was in a taxi going from a train station to see my friend Ollie because we were going out for a night out. And I get in the taxi and this taxi driver just starts chatting to me. And he's chatting away.
You don't do well usually with a chatty taxi driver, from everything I've heard.
It depends if they've got
Uber rating.
The thing is with Uber, it's always fucking Jabd Al-Teek who doesn't know the directions. So that's the problem. It's more, he doesn't know how to get to, you know, like, so like there'll be a 10-minute way to get to where I want to go because you go down the wee side street bit, and he doesn't know the side street. And then when you try and point the side street out to him, he goes through the next side street, which is a dead end, and then it takes you 25 minutes to get there. And you're
of
like,
course.
You know, can we not put them in a little, and by them I mean people not from Glasgow, but can we not put them in a little kind of like, you know, bus tour? We show them the areas.
A lot of people, they overthink things and they overcomplicate them.
But the good thing is, in the UK anyway, I don't know what it's like in the US. In the UK, like, a lot of big cities have Uber, so you use Uber. But when you get into the kind of suburb areas, they do not have Uber. So, in Glasgow, they have Uber. But when you get out to Motherwell, which is about 40 minutes away, they don't have Uber, so they have Redline cabs. And it's always like a really, really Motherwell taxi driver. Like, you do not get someone who has left their lovely home in Bangladesh to live in Motherwell. That is like moving to Iraq. That is
sure.
It's not well received. So anyway, so I'm in this taxi and I thought of you because the man all of a sudden he just was like, So there's no, there's like no introduction to this story. He just feels the need that this is the story I need to hear, and I'm glad because now I'm telling it here. So it was worthwhile. He said, I've got two cats, right? I was like, okay, cool. I'll go with it. You got two cats.
Sure.
Go ahead. And he went, I tell you, so we had two cats, but a boy and a girl got them together, and Oh, they were fucking cute as fuck. Fucking cute as fuck. That's the test. If you see a cat and you say, it's fucking cute as fuck, it's the two fuck rule. It's so cute that you've said this weird word twice, right? So,
I can only
imagine the adorableness of these kittens. And he said, aye, but mate, we were fucked though, because one of them got run over.
I said, oh, God.
He said, aye, splat. Had to go out and clean up with a brush and a shovel. I went, well, that's not really a story I needed to hear. He said, the wee man, he was pining for his sister. It took him 3 weeks. I had to take him to the doctor to see if I could get him a sedative. And then he went into a story about how, you know, cat mental health is a serious issue. And I was like, I've not said that cat mental health is not a serious issue. I feel like I'm being attacked here. I feel like I'm a Trump advisor trying to defend his tactics. And like,
hashtag cat lives matter.
Cat lives matter. They do matter. So, yeah. So then he continues. And then he says, aye, so we've still got the wee man. He's all right. He said, but I'll tell you this. He's a fucking arsehole. I'm like, all right, okay, this has escalated. Why is he an arsehole? I tell you what he fucking did, right? So we got the wee boy a blow up Star Wars bed. I said, okay, that's very specific.
Yeah.
So we got a blow up Star Wars bed, but the fucking cat kept freaking out when it saw it. I said, right, okay. He said, so the wee cunt, right? Because in Glasgow we say cunt. He said, the wee cunt went into the room, and he fucking burst the blow up bed. And I was like, well, I mean, that's. I mean, cats have claws, you know.
Yeah. Maybe not let the cat near the blow-up bed if you know that he has claws.
No, that's what I said to the taxi driver in a kind of light-hearted manner. I said, well, you know, when you put a cat with claws in front of a blow-up bed, we all know that story. No, we don't. But, and then he says, I know, but that's not what makes him an arsehole. I said, all right, what makes him an arsehole? He was like, so I go in, right, and he's fucking burst the blow-up bed. And that's fucking, that's fucking £49 down the chips with B&M bargains. He said, but the other thing is, he sat and looked at me, and he pissed in the bed. He pissed in the fucking bed as he looked at me like I was an arsehole. And I looked at him and I went, you're a wee fucking cunt. And then he said, I do love the wee guy though. That was the end of the story.
I think that's the tale of true love though, Kenny. If somebody can destroy your bed and piss in it, and you still love them at the end of the day, say, good friend, Kenny. And I'm going to put that to the test whenever I eventually make it back over to Glasgow and do that in your bed. And then look at your right as I just whip my dick out and start pissing Jim Cornette style all over your bed.
That's quite an image. I mean, I've already seen Jim Cornette's dick more times than I really wanted to in my life. You know what I mean? Like, I thought once was too much, and I thought twice was even more than I needed.
Right. But you keep looking for some reason.
I do, and it's just, you know, sometimes we've got curiosities in our life that we need to explore, you know? But what I also wanted to talk about, because we've got something lighthearted to talk about before Raw, and Raw was actually quite decent, so some good stuff to talk about. But there's something I want to bring up on the podcast on behalf of you, right?
Sure.
But what I want to say we're currently 8 minutes and 40 seconds into this podcast. I want you all, if you don't enjoy us being political, to skip ahead. But if you're open minded to hearing how fucked up Donald Trump is, then please continue to listen. So,
let's go ahead and preface this before people start skipping, that this is something that is actively affecting me and my life. So, I mean, this is essentially my suicide note, you guys. I wanted to leave you guys something. I don't want to die, but the president wants to kill me. So that's unfortunately where we're going.
I want to give people the bare facts through asking you a couple of questions, and then I want you to just tell us what you think about it. So last year you had two heart surgeries.
That's correct. Two heart procedures. I had two stents embedded in my arteries. My right coronary artery is the specific bad one. The other ones are just fine, but due to a degenerative genetic condition, which killed my grandfather at 39 years old and my mother at 59 years old, it was going to kill me at 32 years old.
Now, at that point, when you had health insurance, you paid how much per calendar year?
The calendar year was 2,700 for my premium.
Now, people might be thinking, okay, $2,700, A, that's a lot, you know, if you live in the UK or whatever, because we are, you know, fortunate enough to have people in the NHS who continue to work hard to make sure that we can live. Although right. Theresa May wants to say it that way, but she's a fucking cunt, horse face, motherfucking... Anyway, now I want to be a devil's advocate here. Maybe there's some people listening to this going, well, do you know what, David? $2,700 is just what you need to pay. And then when we tell them that your money's going to go up, they might go, well, you know, you did have heart surgeries. They need to reclaim their money. But didn't you actually pay money towards your heart surgeries as well?
Yeah, whenever you have any type of procedure done in the United States. So, for instance, I pay the $2,700 that comes out of my paycheck every week to go towards this my health insurance. But whenever I go to see a doctor, there's always usually a $50 copay that I have to pay up front before I can even be seen. So I have to present a credit card or cash, a check, things of that nature, money order, whatever, what have you, a form of cash. So I have to pay that $50 up front. Now, in addition to paying the $2,700, occasionally my prescriptions will not be covered, so I'll have pills that I have to pay for out of pocket. Even though I pay that $2,700, I still have to pay $75 per month for my 7 medications. My insurance will only cover a percentage on some medications, or I'll still have to pay for a generic prescription, which is $5 to $10 per prescription. I get discount cards and things like that from the drug makers themselves, but a lot of these drugs are newer on the market, and they do not have a cheaper generic version available. So I'll have to pay for the name brand drug because there is no other knockoff. It's not like whenever you go to the grocery store and you go, man, I'd really love a 2 liter of Coca-Cola. And then you look at the Coca-Cola price and you're like, oh, geez, you know, it's $2 whenever I could just get the Walmart brand Coca-Cola, the good value for, you know, 50 cents or whatever. That's not the case with some of these drugs. You have to – there's only one Coca-Cola on the market in this instance.
And so, you also had to actually pay money towards your heart surgeries as well, right?
Like
you,
that is correct.
It's not like you have this $2,700 and you're covered. So you also had to pay money to get your heart surgeries.
That is correct. There is a thing called a deductible, and you have to meet your deductible in order for your insurance to even kick in. And sometimes your health insurance will look for loopholes because they're corporations and that's how they make money. They'll search for loopholes that can take advantage of the hospitals and take advantage of the patients. So they'll go, for instance, they didn't want to cover a CAT scan that I had done because it came back negative whenever they were trying to figure out what was wrong with me to begin with. Because at first they didn't think it was my heart. So they underwent a CAT scan, a CT scan for I'm not sure if everyone calls it a CAT scan, but a CT scan, things of that nature, EKG, which turned out perfectly fine as well, despite the fact that it was my heart. So those things can for anyone who may or may not have a heart condition, those things can come back perfectly fine. Mine always did because it wasn't my heart that was bothering me; it was the arteries leading to my heart. So that can still come back negative. Because some of these tests come back negative, the insurance will go, well, we're not paying this $4,000 CAT scan. That's on you now. You have to pay that because it was unnecessary because it did not prevent anything. And in addition to all of this, there's also the deductible, which for the deductible side of things, let's say – my surgeries cost me $90,000, which is what my two heart procedures cost, a little over $90,000, which is more money. That's like twice what I make in a calendar year. So that's a lot of money. In order for my insurance to kick in, for example, for the average insurance, it could be anywhere from a $1,000 deductible where you have to pay that out of pocket before your insurance will even kick in, to a really bad insurance plan, which would be like a $5,000 deductible, where you really don't want to go to the hospital at all unless you're dying, because otherwise it just wouldn't be worth it. You know, let's say you broke a leg, going to the hospital to get that fixed, you know, you're going to have to pay $5,000 before the insurance company will even pay one penny. So that's a really rough deductible. So our current deductible, I honestly can't remember what it is off the top of my head. I want to say it's around $1,500 to $2,000, Kenny.
So you pay all that additional stuff on top of the $2,700 that you pay a year for your insurance. But you found out that there's going to be an increase because fucktard Trump has decided that to make health insurance better for all Americans, which is what he says he's going to do. Tell the people what they're expecting you to pay next year.
Well, due to Donald Trump disavowing and destroying tiny bits of Barack Obama's ACA plan, he has allowed insurance companies to strike up their premiums. So the premium, I know I'm throwing around a lot of words right now, and I know that it's probably very confusing to the user, to the listeners. It's very confusing for me because, you know, before all this happened with me, I didn't know any of this, but I had to learn it. The premium is the $2,700 that I have to pay annually every year. And the premium now, due to the deregulation that he has administered, my health insurance company has shot my premium up from $2,700 to $10,700. So that is an $8,000 increase. If I were to keep the current health insurance that I have, it would literally eat an entire paycheck from me every month. It would be $666, and I do the irony of that does not fall on the irony is a bad term for that, the coincidental hilarity of Satan being invoked in the numerical value of the dollar is not lost on me. So Trump did that, and now I would have to pay $666 a month just to keep my health insurance. That's not including the deductible, which would also raise, and some of my medications no longer being covered, things of that nature, changes in the industry, tiny ones like that. So due to this, I cannot keep my health insurance because I can no longer afford it.
So for anyone who thinks, you know, why are they so hard on this Trump guy? Because of this kind of stuff.
He's literally trying to kill me. Literally.
And what makes me laugh is, like, this is not, like, a Republican thing or a Democrat thing. You get Republicans like John McCain who, you know, are even speaking out saying, what is this guy doing with all the shit that he's doing? And, yeah, fuck him. Like, fuck Donald Trump. Yeah. One absolute shit. Like, the thing today where, like, he phoned up the widow of a soldier and, like, didn't know the guy's name and was like, well, you know, he knew what he was signing up for. Do you know what you're signing up for?
He had no idea. He's so far in over his head. I mean, I'm so tired of celebrities being in politics, Kenny. Just give me a crooked politician at this point. At least a crooked politician wouldn't actively try to kill me out of spite. The black guy came in and built something nice, and he came in and said no and took his sledgehammer to everything. So,
but apart from that, you're okay, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, slow death sentence, but I'm slowly creeping along. I'm hoping that, whenever this rolls over, probably within the next month, that, I can manage to get any doctor's visits that I need to, activate out of the way.
Well, I want to take your mind off.
Try to stay healthy for the next 3 years while he's in office.
So I want to take your mind off it. Because I want to make you feel better. Because there is some news sweeping through the wrestling landscape.
Jinder Mahal is dead? that was a little harsh, I do apologize.
Maybe a little bit. Maybe a little bit harsh.
Jinder Mahal's career is dead? There you go.
Do you know what I hate the most? I was watching SmackDown today, because obviously we're doing the podcast tomorrow. And he does a promo, and his promo was like better than usual. But it's like when you get like 2 day moldy cheese compared to 7 day moldy cheese, so it's not exactly the best compliment. Right. But in my head I was going, oh no, I thought he did something better, I feel dirty inside. But anyway, So, I'm sure you've heard about this news. I'm sure that you've been talking about it with your friends. You called Val at work and said, look, you need to hear about this. Impact Wrestling. You know, it's not another name change. It's not the launch of a streaming service where you can get most of the stuff on YouTube anyway. It's not.
You know, Kenny, my favorite streaming service before I was broke, you know, you get on all these porn sites, you know, and they have like the all access pass to where you can access all types of websites from just one website. Yeah, of course you're familiar. You know, Ollie is especially familiar. I know that for a fact. But, you know, you have all of these interworking, interconnecting things. If I were Impact Wrestling, I'd be reaching out to Ring of Honor and New Japan. I'd be trying to do the porn thing, Kenny.
I mean, Joey Ryan's got his sponsorship, so...
Yeah, I mean, by all means, go for it, you know? So that's what I would do. Also, I apologize, ladies and gentlemen, with how sick I am. I cannot breathe through my nose. I'm going to sound extra nasally this week. But also, I am high as fuck right now on NyQuil because due to my heart surgeries and all the pills that I take and everything, I'm pretty straight-laced. I don't drink alcohol anymore or anything. I can't. But with the NyQuil, which I don't even think I'm supposed to be having, but fuck it, I'm going to be dead in 2 months anyway. I've been hallucinating with all this NyQuil, so I'm chasing the purple dragon right now, you guys. So this podcast is probably going to be kind of fun. So,
well, I'll tell you, speaking of fun, you want to talk about fun. This is not Impact changing their name. It's not launch of a streaming network. It's not the departure of an authority figure. It's not the return of another. Do you know what's going to happen this coming Friday, October 20th?
Are they going to crown a new champion?
Nope. Bobby Lashley and the Impact World Champion Eli Drake are going to descend upon the Crust and Crate Fast Fired Pizza Pub in Ottawa to announce not only Impact Pizza, but also an Impact Drink.
You're fucking with me.
I'm being deadly serious.
I'm not even joking. You're ribbing me right now.
Bobby Lashley and Eli Drake will be there to taste the first ever slices of the inaugural Impact Pizza.
You're fucking with me. This isn't real. I'm hallucinating and right pizza, now. This isn't real.
The pizza is going to be unveiled to the general public. All 250 people that are going to the Impact tapings during Bound for Glory weekend. Impact Pizza is part of the Bound for Glory festivities.
Kenny, so we're going to role play right now, okay? You're going to be Jeff Jarrett, and you're going to serve me, David McCutcheon, with a slice of Impact Pizza.
Should I be like Ed or something? Because Jeff's not there anymore, so I don't want to... As much as we can put things on Jeff Jarrett, I don't want to put this on him. Maybe I should be Ed. I'll be Ed.
I think it would be funnier if you were somebody in the company who's like a personality. Because like Ed Nordholm, you could say what you want to about the guy, but like I don't know how he talks. I was trying to basically get you to do a really dumb impression.
Oh, I know. That's why I'm not doing it. I'm not doing a fucking Jeff Jarrett impression. I'm not a performing monkey.
Okay, then you're the teenage attendant who's handing out the slices of pizza.
Okay, sure. I can do that. What, have we got a scenario here, or am I trying to sell you pizza? Is that what it is?
No. Wait a minute. The people at the attending the TV tapings have to pay for the pizza. It's not like a free slice to try it.
I don't think you can buy the pizza at the tapings. I think the pizza is exclusively at this pub, the Crust and Crate Pizza Pub.
All right. So you're going to be an attendant. We're going to make up a scenario here, Kenny, because I'm really high and I think it'll be funny.
Sure, go for it.
So we're at the Impact tapings. They're unveiling the pizza.
So I'm at some sort of stall and I'm going to try and sell you these pizzas.
No. In fact, you're giving out a slice to everyone in attendance, and you come up to me while I am seated with my Impact Wrestling program. Global Force Impact Wrestling, and I've got my program in tow, and I'm reading it, and you're interrupting my reading right now.
Okay, sure. Excuse me, sir, can I just tempt you to a lovely slice of our new Impact Pizza before you enjoy the event?
Jesus Christ, son, we're in fucking Dog Balls, Kentucky. How come you sound like you're from Glasgow, Scotland?
My mother was a whore, and we didn't know who my father was, and then she died in a fire when I was five, so I got handed to the only potential father candidate who would answer the phone, and he was from here, so...
Jesus Christ,
yeah, it's a shame. She really got about. She really did.
I can imagine.
She died from thrush.
Oh, yeah. Fuck's sake. The thing is, though, is I didn't even, you know, I didn't want to hear your fucking life story, kid. But what are you doing interrupting my reading time?
So we've got this new Impact Pizza because we've decided that, you know, there's so much stuff going on, the politics, you know, like the politics of backstage.
Nobody likes that stuff. We want to get down to the lighthearted goodness that defines Impact Wrestling.
Which is why I thought, or we thought, you know, that pizza is the way to everyone's heart. So, like, pizza is the best thing for you. I could even give you a full pizza right now, and I can't imagine anything bad would ever happen to you. It's such a good pizza.
Wow. So do you have like a calorie count or an index of fat content?
It's said that each slice contains between 212 and 817 calories, depending on how much cheese is on whatever slice.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't eat pizza anymore, but I will try this to see exactly what it tastes like.
Sure. Do you want me to stay in case you want me to go and get another one for you?
Absolutely. Don't you fucking move. If I wanted you to move, goddammit, I would kick your fucking ass and make you move.
That's aggressive.
Now let me try this pizza.
Okay.
Ugh.
Good, right?
Oh, fuck!
He's got
a good goddamn pizza!
Now, that interaction is probably not too dissimilar to how an interaction will go on the day, only I think that the man that David's portraying will just laugh in the face of whoever is trying to end a pizza. But I want to give the best comment of this whole thing.
Well, let's roll it back there, Kenny. I was playing, of course, Vince McMahon incognito.
I know, he's going to puke.
At first, you know, he has to spit it out because, you know, he's on a very strict regimen there. But... he thinks the pizza's so great that he breaks out a character and he buys Impact Wrestling right on the spot because he loved that pizza so goddamn much. Goddamn, pal!
What a professional. But our good friend, Finn Martin, PowerSlam podcast host, he posted about this today on his Facebook, which is, you know, the Impact Pizza and the official signature beverage. There's no further information on what that beverage is. But
horse piss.
One of the commenters on this, I think, has nailed one of the best Facebook comments of the year. Now, this was like the third comment, so this guy had done this pretty quickly. So here's what Finn wrote first, right? We'll read it out. Finn wrote, Impact Wrestling will hold a press conference at the Crust and Crate Pizza Pub in Ottawa, Canada this Friday to announce the launch of the Impact Pizza, an official signature beverage, as part of the publicity for Bound for Glory at Ottawa's Aberdeen Pavilion on November 5th, and the Impact tapings that will take place at the same venue from November 6th to 10th. This really is happening. Lashley and Eli Drake will descend upon the Crust and Crate on Friday afternoon to eat slices from the inaugural Impact Pizza. The Crust and Crate seemed quite excited by the news. In the pub's most recent tweet on October 13th, it wrote, "Feeling lucky this Friday the 13th? We just got followed by Impact Wrestling. It's like winning the cage match. 1, 2, 3. Now, here is the response by a man that I think deserves a lot of praise, which is Marlon Arancibia. And here's what Art Marlin had to say. The Impact Pizza, a very cheesy product with a disappointingly small base, made with stale ingredients that make it hard to digest. The Impact signature beverage fails to create a buzz and leaves a nasty taste in the mouth. Marlin, that comment, I mean, good. Summed up both the Impact Pizza and the Impact drink more than I could. The worst thing is, I'm really, really hungry, and because I'm quite... ill, I can't really eat in too heavy, so like the talk of pizza is making me want to eat one, but I just can't.
Well, I mean, you know, being a heart patient and never being able to eat pizza is making me want to Kenny, if you served that Impact Pizza on a bum's ass, I would lick the plate, sir, because that's how much I want to eat pizza. It could be the worst pizza on the planet, and I would still be all about it.
But let me ask you, because obviously the thing is, you know, you have made a very serious life change, which, you know, you don't go into often enough on the podcast, I don't think.
No, I'm very humble about it.
And you constantly, you have kind of, you don't eat a lot of bad stuff, whatever, but, you know, once in a while you are going to have a pizza, right? Because you don't want to just never have it again. So my question is...
What's the point of living if you can't have it occasionally?
So say, like, you're going to have, like... So if you were going to have a pizza, say once every month or once every... whenever it is that you do it. Will you sort of say, right, I'm going to have a whole pizza, I'm going to have half a pizza, I'm going to have a slice? What would you do?
Usually I will get, like... It depends on, like, if a place serves a small pizza that's, like, 8 to 10 inches, and that's usually what I'll do. And I'll have most of the pizza there, and then I'll save 2 to 3 or 4 slices for lunch, like the next day or something like that. To where basically the pizza gets consumed within a 48-hour period. That way I can just work it off and not fall into the trap of eating poorly on a nightly basis.
And then, you know, I'm guessing that you enjoy whenever you get to do that, right? Because you get to have the thing.
Of course. I literally live for that and my wife. That's the only two things for at this point.
I understand.
And Braun Strowman throwing office chairs at people. Those are the three things.
But now, do you... Because now, obviously, having a pizza is like... So if you have a pizza and it's bad, you can't exactly just have one the next day. This is your cheat meal that you have.
Right. So now, right. I compare it to getting a tattoo. You can get, like, I can eat a pizza, but that pizza is going in my arteries permanently, so it better be fucking good. Just like if you get a tattoo, it better be fucking good, because it's going to be on your skin permanently.
Now, we're going to have to get a pizza when we're in New Orleans. We're going to have
yes.
to do that.
Yes, but
what I was going to say is, now, do you just stick with the places that you know, or do you ever go rogue and try a new pizza with the risk that it might not be a good one?
For me, it's all about comfort zone. If it's up to me entirely, whenever I'm craving a pizza, I go to, like, one of two places, probably.
Do you want to name them in case people are in St. Louis and they want to go?
Yeah, you can go to Fortell's Pizza Den. That is the place to go. Whenever I go there, I get a small pizza with jalapeno cheese, like the pepper jack stuff.
Jeez.
And I will put jalapenos and pepperoni on that sucker. And that is my pizza of choice. If I could only eat one pizza for the rest of my life, that is the one. And 9 times out of 10, that's what I will go for. And then the others, it just all depends. If I want Chicago style, I would go to Pie St. Louis, which President Barack Obama, a real American president, liked pie so much, and he was from Chicago, that he had a pie installed within the White House. Like, the chef actually came out and made him St. Louis-style, Chicago-style pizza whenever he wanted.
That's the power, isn't it? Like, that's the power when you know you've made it, when you can be like...
Yeah.
It's like, I'd be like, can we just get, like, a McDonald's breakfast bun maker in here so I can make a sausage and egg McMuffin whenever I want?
Oh, sausage and egg McMuffin's the best fucking thing.
I'm going to make you have one in New Orleans. I don't even care. I'm just going to be like, come on, it's one. It's one.
I do prefer a biscuit, though.
I can't get on board with that biscuit. I can't do
that. Yeah, American style, Southern American. I need the sweet tea and the biscuits, Kenny.
So now that we've talked about, you know, cats, women on planes, Trump, medication, and Impact Pizza, it only makes sense that we now go and talk about Raw. So again, I'm not feeling tremendous, and neither is David, so we're probably not going to go super long on this, but we're just going to talk about the big points on Raw.
I will say, I know we both feel like shit and that we need to get this over with because we're both going to die. But we should probably touch on the news of Neville and potentially Nia Jax walking out.
Oh, yeah. So the Neville thing... Oh, God, this will be like a 20-minute conversation. First of all, the Nia Jax thing, Pro Wrestling Sheet have reported on it. It's not what has been made out to happen. She has not walked out. She was granted a leave of absence for personal reasons. That could mean a myriad of different things.
Of course. And the thing is, like, frankly, it's none of our business.
Yeah, and also, like, she's been arguably the most protected woman on Raw. So I don't really think that, you know, I can understand why Neville's like, fuck this.
Yeah.
But, like, Nia Jax, I don't see it. I'd be surprised. So, you know, I guess more to come on her. But the Neville thing, let's talk about what we know. Neville, originally it was reported that he walked out at Raw.
Yeah.
That he was unhappy with the creative, that he was supposed to job to Enzo that night in the main event, and he chose to quit on the spot. There's other reports saying that he never actually made it to the building, and he just quit, you know, either on the phone or whatever else. So, yeah, nobody knows what's happening with him. I guess it's up to whether the company are going to let him go or whether they're going to try and, you know, make him work through it. What is your take on the Neville situation?
I think that Neville has every right to be frustrated. If this was used as a springboard to promote him to the main roster as opposed to the 205 Live bullshit, I think that would be great. But if they're just going to hold him down, you know, Kenny, before the Cruiserweight tournament a year ago, I was historically, you can go back and fact check this. Before it started, I was not on board with it because I said that it would pigeonhole performers and they would be stuck in this dead division, similar to how WCW was towards the end when Rey Mysterio couldn't break out of the situation that he was in because he was deemed a cruiserweight. Same thing with Chris Jericho. Whenever he was in WCW, they wouldn't let him sniff the main event or the main card because of the fact that he was a cruiserweight. And that just, it's not fair to the performers. We are beyond that at this point. Kayfabe is dead. It's not like we can't believe that Rey Mysterio can't win the title and things of that nature. To me, this is just a... I'm going to use the word segregation, and I don't want to make any links to people of color or anything like that. But it is, by the very definition, it is segregation. It's not obviously on the same level as that or anything like that. So not making the comparison, just using the technical definition of the word. It is segregation of the roster. And segregation of any kind, in my opinion, is bad. I'm a fan of intergender matches and things of that nature. Obviously, the WWE is not. And I completely understand where Neville's coming from. It was my fear all along that an amazing performer and an amazing character would get held down simply because he was in that division. And furthermore, I think it's bullshit that Finn Balor is not in the Cruiserweight division despite being under 205, yet Neville is pigeonholed there. Whenever Neville, I would argue, is much larger than Finn Balor. If you look at the muscle mass up between the two, whoo, it's nuts. So that's essentially my encapsulated thoughts. I hope that Neville manages to break away from the WWE and carves out his own niche if they are not going to settle and work with him. I think that he is in the right here, and the indie money is good right now, and I certainly hope that they will grant him his release if they can't work out their differences.
For me, it's like there's two sides to it, and I understand both. Actually, I think from WWE's point of view, like, yeah, the Cruiserweight thing is not really for me, mainly because if this was like 1997, I'd be all for it because it's all separate. But now a lot of the guys in the main events do the high spots and the Cruiserweight like stuff, so it doesn't really feel that different.
The Cruiserweight thing should be for me, but it's not, which proves that it's not working.
But in honesty, like, I know it's probably not going to be a popular thing to say, but I don't think that Neville... I think if Neville was in the main roster, he would be a lost mid-card guy at best.
And that's which is also problematic, though.
But I think the problem with it is that there's so many top guys, or guys who are kind of the upper mid-card who could be into top guys. You know, you've basically got the kind of AJ Styles, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Nakamura, Baron Corbin. Not Baron Corbin. I'm not saying Baron Corbin. I made an error there. Do not put that in the back of what I just said. Braun Strowman is what I was trying to say. Braun Strowman, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, Roman Reigns, Samoa Joe, Brock Lesnar. So there's all these people before you're even going to get a sniff of someone underneath when you get to the Finn Balors and the Bray Wyatts and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't think that if he went in the main roster, he would do that well. I think he'd do okay, but so I think that the cruiserweight thing has actually been good for him in a way, because he's been basically the head of the division and the only guy that really matters and gets showcased because he created this great character as King of the Cruiserweights. So I understand why they haven't put him up onto the main roster, but I also understand from his point of view that, you know, if he's done with the cruiserweight title thing and all they want to do is just make him another guy in the cruiserweight division and he wants to leave and do something else, I get it. You know, I get where he's coming from. He would do very well in Japan, he would do very well in the Indies, and, you know, there's no reason that he can't leave and go and make it big and come back. People have done it before. Drew, you know, is an example. I know it was different reasons, but, you know, Drew went away and look where he is now, and people can go and come back, or people can just go and do their own thing. It doesn't need to be a set case, but I hope he either gets his release or they sort it out, and I think he's really good, so I hope that he ends up doing whatever makes him happy.
He is one of the top five characters in the WWE right now, I would argue. So I really hope that he can manage to figure it out and they will work with him.
So let's talk about the big points coming out of Raw. So we kick off the show with Kurt Angle in the ring. There's tables, ladders and chairs surrounding the ring. And he welcomes everybody and spoke about the Shield
thing. You know, Kenny, the tables, ladders, and chairs thing, a little bit of insight. My previous employer, I once was in charge of creating a holiday gift buying guide. And that was something that I worked on as a freelance writer. And I made the reference. Kenny, I'm going to name the reference, and I want you and all of the listeners at home to play along.
Okay.
Lions and tigers and bears, oh my. Do you know that reference?
That's Edge and Christian, right? is it not?
The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, well, yeah, sure, they did it first, but Edge and Christian said
it. Right. No. We're not even talking in a wrestling context.
Okay, well, you didn't specify.
That's fair. I'm chasing the purple dragon. And I probably shouldn't even mention this because the idiot who said this still works there.
Fuck him.
But I don't work there anymore, so fuck him. So I made the reference, and he goes, I've never heard that before. What is that? And I go, that's a pop culture idiom, you know? And he goes, I don't know what that's even from. I've never heard that used before in my life. And I go, it's from The Wizard of Oz. And he goes, what is that movie, like 100 years old? No one these days understands what a Wizard of Oz is. So.
Really?
Yeah, literally. And not only that, chewed me out like that in a email chain that included the heads of the company. So. I literally left that week.
Because of him.
Yeah. That was the last straw. That was the last straw. I was like, nope, I'm done here. Then I just washed my hands. So the whole Lions and Tigers and Bears Oh My thing kind of triggered that for me. But a fun little off-track, offbeat, off-topic story.
And get me to get a question wrong. So, you know, we can win on multiple fronts. So we open the show, Angle's talking about the, you know, the 3-on-4 match at TLC. And then we hear, for the first time in years, Sierra Hotel India Echo Lima Delta Shield. As the Shield come out through the crowd with the gear on, this was sexual. I loved this.
This was like the highlight, man. This was excellent.
They come out, fans are chatting, this is awesome. Nicholas, one of our listeners, had said that he had kind of wished that Kurt Angle didn't talk over the music, which I think is a fair point. But, you know, Kurt Angle wasn't around when they were around, so maybe he just didn't really get it. But fans are chatting, this is awesome. You know, Kurt Angle gets out of the ring, and Roman Reigns says it's a good choice because when the Hounds enter the ring, people get out of their yard or they beat their ass. And I love that Kurt Angle's face was just like, "Are you fucking talking to me? Are you fucking saying that to me?" And then Rollins tells him to take it easy, and you know, they had their first match together at TLC 5 years ago. Nice little bit of history there for it. And that they dominated. Ambrose mentioned, you know, tables, ladders, and chairs, and that their opponents were going to go to war with the Masters. But Braun Strowman's music hits, and he comes out with Sheamus, Cesaro, and The Miz, and Curtis Axel. Kurt Angle's like saying, no, this match can't take place right now. It's, you know, we've got the tag title match with Sheamus and Cesaro against Ambrose and Rollins. We've got the cage match with Braun and Roman. Do not make any move towards each other. It needs to wait till Sunday. So kind of teasing us at the beginning of the show about the main event. I thought this was a hot opening segment and a good hook for people to keep watching to see the cage match and see the tag title match.
I am all in on the Shield reunion deal, man. This is really good. This segment, really excellent. I thought that Kurt Angle's involvement kind of held it back a little bit. Not necessarily a fault of his, but I thought it should have just been a solo spotlight for these guys. But I mean, either way, this was a lot of fun, and it was a walk down memory lane. And a lot of people that always get on us about getting that Undertaker nostalgia, they were coming in their britches whenever the show came out.
Yep, yep.
So you guys, that is what we feel whenever we see the Undertaker, even with as old and decrepit as he is. That's a little bit of the nostalgia that we always love and that we always long for.
I did love, though, that when Roman got the mic, he was booing at first. Because they're like, no, we hate you. And then they remember he's in the Shield and they're like, yay! So,
you know, Roman was like, oh my God, I'm getting cheered again.
I think he wanted to soak it in for a second and just enjoy it.
Like, yeah,
this
I
is
would.
What it feels like to like me.
People like me. They really like me.
So yeah, hot opening segment to kick off the show. We got Elias playing the guitar in the ring with Anderson and Gallows. Now this is basically a Marmite thing. Yeah, I loved it, you hate it. They played the Honky Tonk Man theme song at one point as a warm up. Elias is critiquing them, saying it's not too bad. They play a song about Jason Jordan being terrible. And it leads us to Jason Jordan, Titus O'Neil, and Apollo Crews against Elias and the club. So, what say you, David? Was the Elias, Anderson, and Gallows thing good fun, or was it cringy crap?
A mix of both? Is that a possible answer? I cringed a bit, but then I also giggled a bit, so...
I think if you're able to just accept that Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows are not what they used to be, then you can enjoy it. But if you think of them as they used to be, it'll make you want to cry.
That is the best way to put it. And also, I did tweet out after watching that I was hoping that Gallows and Anderson would launch into Grizzled Young Vet, which is one of their original songs that is absolutely hilarious from Talkin' Shop. And Luke Gallows liked it on Twitter. So
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe I'm planting the seeds for Luke Gallows to bust out Grizzled Young Vet.
God, if he does, we'll never hear the end of it from you.
Never. Even though it was probably his intention to begin with, I'm going to take credit for it.
Even though it was probably his intention. Jesus Christ. But in the end...
Well, Kenny, mm-hmm. I am the voice of wrestling.
Okay. I'm too sick to argue. In the end, Apollo Crews got a very rare pinfall when he pinned Carl Anderson, who never gets a pinfall. So Jordan O'Neil and Apollo Crews won. For me, this was like, if you were to look up the words pedestrian wrestling match, this would be it.
Yeah, definitely. Technically, it was fine, but man, oh man. Now my boys are losing to Apollo Crews clean. It's sad, Kenny. It's utterly pathetic.
To be fair, I think you know they've really lost it when Gallows starts to take the loss, because he never takes the loss. It's always Anderson. Always.
Yeah.
We get a video for Asuka. Very excited about seeing her this Sunday. Renee Young interviews Emma, who says she's sick of hearing about Asuka, and she started the Women's Revolution, beat four of the toughest women in the world last week, and is a social media superstar. Okay. Alexa Bliss comes in and says Asuka hadn't done anything. She was, you know, giving Emma compliments. And Alexa invited Emma to be her partner in a match tonight against Mickey and a partner, and then Alexa said, maybe Betty White's available about Mickey's age. The test that Alexa is really good is actually that even though the verbiage and the story is pretty fucking lazy and diva-esque, Alexa still manages to make me laugh.
Well, there you go. It did literally nothing for me. This is the most bored I've been with the women in since the Divas era, actually. So.
Well, it's going to end on Sunday when Alexa beats
Mickie
James.
It will end on Sunday. That's exactly what I'm hoping for, buddy.
We get a cruiserweight match, Cedric Alexander against Jack Gallagher. Cedric gets the win. I didn't really pay much attention to this. Did I miss anything?
Nothing. No, this was about as bland and forgettable as you can imagine. It was a perfectly fine wrestling match, and that's all.
We're going to get Cedric Alexander and Rich Swann against Gallagher and Kendrick at TLC. Two cruiserweight matches on TLC, which is interesting. The Miz, Sheamus, Cesaro, and Curtis Axel commit for Miz TV. Braun Strowman is the guest. And Strowman says, you know, now I'm going to tear them apart one by one, piece by piece. The Shield's going to be done and gone forever. Miz is boasting the Shield's no match for them. And then Kurt Angle comes out because Dean Ambrose again had said, you know, we'll beat 3, 4, 5 guys, however. And Miz said, well, you know, Dean Ambrose said 5 guys, so I guess we have a partner. And Kurt Angle's like, no, you don't. Come on. And Miz's like, you know, that's what Ambrose said. He needs to stick to his word. And Angle gives him a compromise. And he says, okay, tonight, what needs to happen is if Braun Strowman beats Roman Reigns in the cage, you get your fifth partner. If Roman Reigns wins, Strowman's out of the match, and it's 3-on-3. I thought this was a very good hook because we've seen Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman fight a lot. And even though it's always fun, like, I quite like the hook of, like, I wonder if Strowman is going to be at the match, or I wonder if they're going to get a fifth partner. I thought it was a decent hook for the main event.
Yeah. It accomplished what it set out to do. So yeah, no, it was a fun little segment.
We got Sasha Banks versus Alicia Fox. Alicia Fox, who now has a T-shirt for the first time in her career, so congratulations to Foxy.
Big ups.
And Sasha Banks got the win with the bank statement. They're now going to have a match in the kickoff show on Sunday. It's one of those things. I know that, like, some people are like, yeah, it's good that the women are getting more time, and I'm like, could they not do something good, though?
Drizzling shits, right?
Just dull.
Yeah.
Then, and basically what happened was after the match, Charlie interviewed Sasha when Alicia Fox attacked her from behind, which sets up the match on Sunday. Oh, boy. You know, sometimes you think, maybe somebody's turning a corner. Maybe I've been too hard on somebody.
Yeah.
Maybe I've been too hard on Kalisto, you know? Last week, he was able to win the Cruiserweight Championship, and then old Kalisto came back. Because Enzo Amore comes out, does his shtick, and says that, you know, he's going to win the title on Sunday. And Kalisto comes out. And he grabs the mic and says, he says, something like, you know, you'll know, what was the exact verbiage? So I've got a sound, hold on.
It was good.
Here we go. Enzo, there ain't going to be no excuses at TLC when I come out, new Cruiserweight champion.
Oh boy. He doesn't even know that he's got it.
New Cruiserweight champion. He is the worst at doing any form of promo. He literally got confused halfway through a sentence.
To be fair, I often do forget that he's actually the Cruiserweight champion too.
It's been a week!
Yeah, and I've already forgot it like 3 times. People have been correcting me on Twitter like nonstop.
And then Mustafa Ali was out as well, and you know, he ran out and basically a ton of heels got involved. Noam Dar, Tony Nese, Davari, and Gulak all attacking Kalisto from behind, while Enzo was just kind of saying, you know, you deserve it. Mustafa Ali comes out to kind of make the save, but then Enzo blindsides him. So we've kind of maybe got like a heel faction now, I don't know, on 205 Live. Enzo.
It immediately made the Cruiserweight division much less interesting than it was whenever they all just hated Enzo.
Yeah, that was very interesting. That time's gone now. And Enzo performing his move onto Kalisto at the end, I guess, kind of signifies that on Sunday, Kalisto's going to keep the championship so that he can continue to do good lucha things.
I'm going to say that he actually ends up losing. So, but we shall see. Enzo making reference to Neville walking out too, saying he made Neville quit. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, I like Enzo now. Now I'm like, he's a good heel? Okay, fine. I'll deal with it. No problem.
He works in the capacity that he's in, but like they've relegated him to the division where nothing ultimately matters, so.
Just a burst of positive energy, aren't you?
It's what is the phrase, Kenny? A fart in the wind? That's Enzo.
On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most that you could want to and 1 being the least, how much would you like to add an additional show to the ITR podcasting network where we cover 205 live every week?
Oh, God. Could you imagine? Just like, I think I would rather cover ROH, and that says something.
Well, I would definitely rather cover ROH, without question. Yeah. I get watch Dalton Castle. Up next, we get the tag title match with Seth and Dean against Sheamus and Cesaro. They go about 12 minutes. Dirty deeds in the end on Cesaro for the pinfall. These guys just are incapable of having a bad wrestling match. Like,
yeah.
Incapable.
Yeah, no, this was really good. I thought that this was one of their better TV outings. I often fear though that they're going to continually push this to where we'll get a little bored or sick of it, and that always kind of makes me a little sad, but as of right now it's still working. I just hope that they don't push it into the ground to the point that we can't stand to bear it.
Do you know, see, when I was watching this, I just felt so good about life, because I was like, Sheamus and Cesaro are absolute pricks, and they're such a great tag team, and then Seth and Dean are in the gear, and I'm just so happy. I was just happy. That's just made me happy.
I haven't been happy in years, Kenny.
Well, you did get married. One of my favorite parts of this show that's really unintentional is Curtis Axel giving Sheamus and Cesaro a pep talk. Is one of my favorite things. It was so good.
Axel was really on par here, I guess you could say.
Yeah, because he knew he had to ham this up, and you know they need to stay strong because Braun's gonna be the fifth member and all that sort of stuff, and then Strowman comes in, and you know, Axel's saying, I want to be in there because I want to find Roman Reigns and hurt him. And then Strowman just looks at him and says, go find him. And Curtis Axel realizes, oh, fuck, I have to actually back things up when you're in my team. and Axel goes away as Braun Strowman looks menacingly. So, again.
I love Strowman in this segment. So good.
WWE specifically is at its best when there is a thread through the night. You know, when
yes,
some...
I would agree with that completely. Yeah,
because you're into what's happening. You're curious to the possibilities. So yeah,
it's a story arc over the course of the entirety of the night.
Yeah. Now the worst part of the show was up next when Finn Balor had to cut a promo. Oh my God! Why does he have to cut promos? They're so bad.
I was so high during this segment on cough syrup.
High to the point where you thought it was good?
High to the point when I thought, I was like, oh my God, Pumpkinhead is going to fight Norman Bates at the pay-per-view. And I'm sitting there, eyes spinning.
The demon coming through my TV. Demon versus Sister Abigail.
Oh, is that who it is?
I mean...
Damn it, I popped myself!
You always pop yourself. You rarely pop anyone more than you pop yourself.
I really need to be less funny though, Kenny.
Oh my God. Finn Balor, Bray Wyatt. I would argue on course to maybe being one of the top five worst feuds of 2017.
Yeah, I would say that it's not even on course. I would say that it pretty much is. So yeah, no doubt.
Balor cutting a promo about Celtic Festival. Oh, who gives a fuck? Up next, Alexa Bliss and Emma against Mickie James and Bayley.
Do you think they're going to bring Balor out with Hornswoggle? Like, do you think Hornswoggle's coming back and he's going to be Balor's, like, valet?
I mean, Jinder's champion. I can't write anything off anymore. You never know. Which is a shame, because Hornswoggle was actually the man that made me hate midgets in wrestling. I used to love them. Max Mini, really? Mini Vader, MMW. But
yeah, MMW, of course.
Hornswoggle ruined it. Ruined it all because I hate him.
I tried to book Hornswoggle once, but he wanted too much money to be blown up by a landmine.
I legitimately got asked to book Hornswoggle. He's not that much money, but I would happily put... Anyway, never mind. up next. Yeah, so Mickie James and Bayley beat Alexa Bliss and Emma when Mickie gets the win. You know, the standard babyface wins by pinning heel champion before heel champion retains on Sunday. It was like WWE writing 101.
Yeah, so boring.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, just my biggest fear. Disappointing.
My biggest fear is that, please God, tell me we're not going to get a 5-on-5 Women's Survivor Series match without Nia Jax. Please.
That would be really bad. Like, really, really, really bad.
We get a promo with The Miz telling Braun Strowman it's a privilege for him. Sheamus and Cesaro to team with them, and everybody tells Miz that, you know, Axel's away looking for a fight with Reigns, and Miz is just like, oh god. R.I.P. Curtis Axel.
I love whenever Braun's just like, I told him to do it.
Yep. Braun having human conversations is the best.
I love Braun's dynamic in this team.
Yeah, I love that Braun's the most Braun thing of all the Braun things.
Oh, it's so good.
We get,
you know, the entire, I'm doing a live event on Friday for the date night with me and the wife. I bought us front row tickets back whenever I could afford to buy things. And the entire reason I got us front row tickets is so we can see Braun Strowman front row.
That I mean, you'll be able to smell the sex from him, you know?
It's going to be great. I cannot wait. I will be posting pictures all over my Twitter account at ZoopSoul. So follow me.
Live event in St. Louis, Braun Strowman. Mickey James and Bayley were hugging backstage, and then Mickey James said, you know, the comments really hurt, and you know, she's proud of who she is, what she's done. She's got a 3-year-old at home waiting for her, who's the light of her life, and that one of the greatest feelings would be taking home the Women's Championship to Donovan. And she would have the last laugh on Alexa Bliss. I really wish that she would stop calling Alexa Bliss Biscuit Butt, because I don't think it's a very good line.
Biscuit Butt, that's, I stole it. That's what I'm calling my wife now, Biscuit Butt. So.
You really do disgust me sometimes.
It's like, that's the worst insult I've ever heard, and I'm just like, funniest thing I've ever heard, stealing it.
The Miz was searching for Curtis Axel. He found him hanging upside down with his shirt torn off and a bunch of red makeup in his stomach, which was just great. Like, The Miz and Braun Strowman and Sheamus and Cesaro and Curtis Axel in backstage segments with Axel trying to find Roman Reigns and Axel giving Sheamus and Cesaro pep talks and Strowman being menacing is the best.
It's a excellent dynamic that I never thought I needed until now. And now I want to see it every week, and you know it's just going to end very shortly.
But better to have loved and lost than to not have loved at all.
Yeah, that's fair.
Then we had Miz standing by two referees. The trainer was checking on Axel. You know, Renee said, would Miz have a chance to replace him? And he said, I think the world of Curtis Axel, but he was never the fifth man.
Which was,
who's it going to be?
At this point, did you have any idea who it might be?
Nope, not a clue. Did you?
No, I generally don't like to overthink things and guess, because chances are if I do that, I'll end up getting it right, and I like being surprised.
See, what I, that the opposite happens to me. I end up, like, over-guessing so much that I'm disappointed by what it is, because I'm like, oh, maybe it's The Rock. You know, I just overthink it, like, to the highest degree.
Right, I kind of turn my brain off, and I'm like, I'll figure it out whenever we get to that destination. That way I don't, like, ruin the surprise for myself.
So we have the cage
match. Also, the past few times I've done that, it ends up being the Ascension, so I'm not going to do that anymore. The Ascension. I'm like, oh, it's going to be the Ascension, isn't it? Here comes the Ascension.
The Roman Reigns Braun Strowman cage match in the main event. It goes about 18 minutes. Really, really fun stuff, as always, with these two. Superman punches and throwing people off cages and different things. Sheamus and Cesaro get involved to try and stop Roman from winning. Rollins and Ambrose come out, they all brawl. They end up brawling backstage, and The Miz ends up closing a door to the parking garage and locking them all out of the building. So that was great, because finally they're doing something where they go, well, why would Roman ever be on his own? So we need to write Ambrose and Rollins away, and they did. So I commend them for the story there.
It only made sense.
So Strowman is doing well, and then all of a sudden Reigns has got a second wind. He's hitting Superman punches. Strowman's getting hit to one knee. Reigns is setting up for the spear. Strowman presses him into the air, but again another Superman punch, and then Reigns goes back. He's about to hit the spear when Kane's music hits. The red lights, the fire. Reigns ends up speeding Strowman anyway, and then Kane climbs through the ring wearing the mask, choke slams Roman Reigns, then gives him a tombstone. Braun then does the power slam, pinning Roman Reigns 1-2-3. Kane is the fifth member of the team at TLC. It'll be the Shield. Reigns, Rollins, and Ambrose against The Miz, Sheamus, Cesaro, Braun Strowman, and Kane. Very fun surprise.
Yeah, kind of fun. I didn't expect it. I figured that he would be taking off entirely until the election's over or anything like that. Do you have any idea what's going on with that election now?
I don't. I mean, I imagine that he's maybe just back for this in the pay-per-view. Like, it's maybe just a one-time thing.
Possibly, yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine he's going to be like, listen, guys, I'm going to have to hold off this campaign I've been doing for like 6 months just to go back.
Yeah, there's no way. Kind of funny though, guys going up for office, obvious heel. Makes all the sense in the world given the politics we've discussed today.
That's true. I'm very fascinated by Kane's mask and wig. Because every time he comes back, the wig seems to have more hair on it. And it's darker and it's thicker. Yeah.
For all the hair he loses, the wig gains more hair. It's like a supernatural connection to him and himself. The big old fruit roll-up.
I do now, love
that. Val had a theory, the reason why he came back as a heel despite being in an election right now.
Okay.
He's not inherently a bad person, Kenny. But having the fruit roll-up on his face, which he can never eat, it's just in a perpetual state of teasing him that it's there but it can never be eaten. It's driven him mad, and that's why he's a bad guy.
I think she's cracked it. I
think so too, yeah.
Do you know what I like about this is I really am intrigued by the kind of team of Kane and Strowman together. That intrigues me for some reason. And I also like that I could see there being dissension between them.
Yeah, definitely, for sure.
And I think it makes the Shield look stronger, and The Miz kind of being the guy pulling all the puppet strings makes him look good. Sheamus and Cesaro are great. I'm just all in. Great main event storyline. Really looking forward to it. And good stuff.
And also, I think we can definitely agree that him coming back as normal Kane and not corporate Kane is definitely a good thing.
See, it's tough for me because I do like... I'm not huge in corporate Kane. But Human Resources Kane in 2015 was one of my favorite things. Where he was like, remember like the woman from HR came in to say that he was bullying Seth Rollins, and like he was just like the nicest guy when she was there, and then he would turn into regular Kane and want to kill Seth Rollins. Kane's very funny.
I'm not saying it's bad, but if we are getting Kane, I would prefer the Kane that we know and love.
Oh, no, if we're
due to that, due to that nostalgia factor, you wouldn't want American Badass Undertaker. I wouldn't anyway.
Well, we know one person that would.
But he comes out to Kid Rock songs, okay?
Limp Bizkit.
No, Limp Bizkit songs. That's what it is. Either way, they're all the same.
All that kid music. But I think for this TLC, of course, it was going to be Kane with the mask and all that. And yeah, good for him. Good payday for Big Glenn. And I think it adds to the match. I think it makes it even better. So, you know, it's all good. I'm going to give this Raw a... I'm going to give it a 7.5 out of 10. I thought the main event and the tag title match and the story throughout the show carried the other shit bits that were on it.
I will give this a 6 out of 10. The Shield reunion at the very start coming through the crowd, that was the highlight. And the problem with starting a show really hot like that is it all goes downhill from there. So if you catch it at the top of the hour, right as the show pops on, then chances are you've seen the best part and then straight down. But it wasn't too bad, though. You know, it had some good parts.
Story threads throughout the night. Kane reveal
that
at the
Norman
end.
Bates versus Pumpkinhead match. I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be great. I'm really excited for the year after that, whenever they have the Puppet Master versus the Lawnmower Man. That's going to be a great feud, too. So, yeah. No, it should be great, Kenny.
Where can people find you on Twitter if they want to send you well wishes or send you money towards your health insurance?
You can, in America, we have GoFundMes now, so instead of health insurance or anything, in this dystopian world that we live in, we rely on the charitable benefits of strangers. But no, you can follow me at ZoopSoul, that's ZOOPSOUL. I'm pretty great, but not for long, because I'll soon be dead, thanks to our president. Kenny, where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me at KennyMC1985. You can find the brand at Inside_The Ropes. You can also go to patreon.com/InsideTheRopes to sign up for our Patreon service. If you do $3 a month, you get interviews and you get the brand... specific pay-per-view, the brand-specific pay-per-views, so TLC this Sunday. Dave and I will be podcasting about that on Monday over on Patreon. Those reviews usually last about an hour and a half to 2 hours, so you get some really good stuff. We're also behind a paywall, so we can be a bit more outrageous. And you can also get the $5 level, we get all that, plus you get the retro pay-per-view reviews with me and Sondra. We'll be doing Survivor Series in a couple of weeks. Three-parter for that. We'll be bringing in James Dixon to talk about the year leading up to Montreal. Here's the issue is, a lot of people have covered Montreal. I understand that. But for us doing the retro timeline, we need to cover it. And for me, the only way to cover it is to cover it extensively. So the way we're going to do it is we're going to do one podcast on the year leading up to Montreal. We're going to take you from Bret and Shawn at WrestleMania 12 through to Bret's return. Set up the scene of the whole 1997, the relationship with Bret and Shawn and Bret and Vince. All the way up to the night before Survivor Series. Then the second podcast will be a part one of Survivor Series, where we will cover the whole undercard, and we'll have Finn Martin on to do that. And then for the main event, which is Bret and Shawn, and the whole day surrounding it, and all that sort of stuff, we're going to have me, Sondra, Finn, and James Dixon, a four-way for that. And then the fourth podcast, which will be on the free feed, is Retro Raw, where James Dixon is going to join us to talk about the Survivor Series fallout as well. So, Patreon.
So much going on!
So much going on. The $5 level for that. The $7 level, you need classic ITR and the NXT stuff with me and Sondra. The takeover review coming up at War Games will be on there.
Whenever I get healthy enough, Sondra, I'm hoping maybe this weekend, Sondra and I are going to be covering our 5 moments that we would show an outsider to get them into wrestling. And that'll be on Patreon within the coming... I'll say the coming week. I hope we can work that out.
Yeah, so, exactly. So never a better time to sign up for Patreon and get involved with us over there. You can go to insidetheropes.co.uk to buy the remaining general admission tickets for London, Manchester, Dublin and Belfast for Shawn Michaels in January. or you can buy VIP and general admission tickets for Kevin Nash in London the day after Survivor Series on Monday the 20th of November, or you can buy tickets in Glasgow for Scott Hall on December 3rd. Lots going on, as always, here at Inside the Ropes. So we hope that you'll check some of it out, and if you're listening to this on iTunes, please go and leave us a 5-star review. If you don't think we're a 5-star show, then you just don't need to leave a review. There's no point. Why bring the rating down? You'd like to bring us up. Raise us up would be the hope. I'm sorry that this maybe wasn't our best work, given that we are both feeling like absolute dog shit, but hopefully you've managed to enjoy some of it, and hopefully next week we'll be back fighting fit as a man with two heart surgeries and a man with lifetime IBS can be.
That's the hope!
So, David, what wrestling theme song would you like us to play out this week?
Kenny, I am oozing all over the place, out of my nose, out of every orifice you can imagine. So I think it's only apropos that we ooze machismo with a little bit of Razor Ramon, who, by the way, is coming to the UK. Is that right?
He'll be in Glasgow, Scotland on December the 3rd with Inside the Ropes. So it's going to be fun. He's going to be taking pictures, signing autographs, and telling stories, and it's going to be a good time. He doesn't hold back. My favorite Razor Ramon story, or Scott Hall story, is he was telling somebody about how when Vince McMahon sat him down once and said, "Let me tell you about my first homosexual experience," and Scott said, "As opposed to your last one?"
So good. So
with
good.
That being said, here is the soothing sounds. It's an Alan Partridge reference. The soothing sounds of Razor Ramon.